سوف تستمع الجمعية العامة لبيان.
The General Assembly will now hear the
رئيس الجمهور.
A statement from His Excellency Emmanuel Macron, President of the French Republic. I request protocol to kindly escort His Excellency.
There's an adjustment.
No,
yes, Macron. Just saying.
باسم الجمعية العامة.
On behalf of the General Assembly, I have the honor to welcome to the United Nations His Excellency Emmanuel Macron, President of the French Republic, and to invite him to address the General Assembly. You have the floor, Your Excellency.
Monsieur le Président de l'Assemblée.
President of the United Nations General Assembly. Secretary General. Heads of State and Government. Everyone here today inherits hope. The hope of preserving future generations from the scourge of war, building a new world order based on law and keeping good on our word, making progress towards economic and social as well as moral order in peace. Results have been obtained. Human rights are increasingly spreading. Prosperity is growing. Poverty has been pushed back against. These are the achievements of the past decades, and yet it's time to take a fresh look at today's world. Today, we are seeing a far-reaching crisis. The crisis of the Westphalian world order of the past. This world order failed in regulating itself. Economic, financial, environmental, and climatic issues remain pending to date. Then it failed because our collective ability to tackle these crises far too often is hampered by divisions on the Security Council. Our organization very often was reduced to simply condemning the very rights that it is sought to guarantee. 70 years after the adoption by this very assembly in Paris of the Declaration on Human Rights, we are seeing cultural relativism, historic religious relativism, which today rocks the very universal foundations of said rights. Born of hope, the United Nations could become, just like the community of nations before it, the symbol of powerlessness. There's no need to look too far to see who's to blame. These very individuals are present today. They've taken the floor. They are us. They are the leaders of today. And thus, I think that there are three main paths to follow. The first would be deciding that this is simply a historical parenthesis, a passing moment before we go back to life as normal. I don't believe this is the case. I think that we're seeing a crisis of the very foundations of today's world. We're losing our benchmarks and our modes of functioning. This is not a historical parenthesis. It's a reflection of our failures in the past. The second path we could choose would be the prevailing of the most powerful, and that is a certain lawlessness where everyone pursues their own interests. This law is one of unilateralism. It is one which leads directly to isolationism and to conflict, generalized clashes. Man against man, everyone pitted against everyone else. The responsibility for peace is not something which can be delegated. It is not something which can be cast aside. It is something which must be upheld collectively. The law of the most powerful cannot protect any people, be it by way of chemical or nuclear war. How will we solve the situation in Iran? And what has already allowed us to make progress? Was it the power of the very few, the power of the strongest? No, we already knew that the situation was degrading. But what stopped that? The Vienna Agreement of 2015. Today, as I said 1 year ago, our task is not to fuel tensions, but rather to put forward a broader agenda, which addresses all concerns, nuclear, ballistic, regional ones, caused by Iranian policies, but this through dialogue and multilateralism, being frank as well as exacting, but also without posturing. Now, what will solve the issue of trade imbalances and their consequences for our societies? Common rules, in line with today's realities, ones which guarantee fair competition on equal footing, and in no case bilateral dealing of our trade disagreements or new protectionisms. That will not work. What can resolve the crisis between Israel and Palestine? Well, surely not unilateral initiatives, nor trampling upon the legitimate rights of the Palestinian people to legitimate peace, nor underestimating Israelis' fair right to security. There is no credible alternative to the two-state solution, living side by side in peace and security with Jerusalem as capital. Israel is aware that France has unwavering friendship towards Israel, and it is in the name of this friendship that I call for an end to policies which undermine the very possibility of a peace agreement. Continuing along this path would be a mistake. Here, I'm ready, and we should all stand ready, to go beyond our historical positions, to think out of the box, with the real goal of this leading to positive change on the ground. The law of the strongest will only exacerbate tensions and violence. As you've seen, in the face of today's tensions, I don't believe in this law of the strongest. Regardless of what type of legitimacy it masks itself behind, I think there's even a third possible path. It may be the hardest one. It might be the most demanding, one which requires us to craft together a new model and new world balance. After the Second World War, for several decades, We saw a balance which was based on blocks. Then there was the emergence of hyperpowers or superpowers. And for several years now, we've seen new global instability characterized by the emergence of multiple centers of power. The new balance that we must strike should be based on new forms of international and regional cooperation, and I think would be based on three principles. The first is the upholding of sovereignty, which is at the very heart of our charter. The second is enhancing regional cooperation. And third is providing more robust international guarantees or safeguards, and that is to be played out here. These three principles would allow us to address current crises. In Syria, we continue to combat Islamist terrorism, the military support of certain countries allow the regime to shirk responsibility for heinous crimes. The Syrian people has paid the unfortunately high price. There is no winner in a ruined country, that is Syria. What must be won now is peace headed by the United Nations. We cannot decide for the Syrian people. We can simply provide the ways and means to achieve the solution I highlighted above. So, this is a solution which is not just led by the guarantor states of Astana, but also by the international community through the small group and the coordination of the United Nations and the SRSG. Creating the ways and means to solve the humanitarian crisis and at once crafting an inclusive, lasting political solution through constitutional reform and the holding of free elections. That is what it means to uphold Syrian sovereignty. It is neither acting instead of the Syrian people to decide who the leader should be, nor covering up for all crimes in accepting that this leader remain where he is for an indeterminate period of time in Libya. This is the new approach that would lead us to a lasting solution. The current status quo allows militia and traffickers to gain ground and to destabilize the entire region. We shall not be providing Libyan people with the way to extricate themselves from the crisis if we leave the situation as it is, leave the region or the entire country up to the warring of various centers of power. Recently, there was a meeting in Paris bringing together state institutions. These state institutions must be supported by the United Nations in close cooperation with the African Union. Yesterday, an important step was taken, and I'd like to share it with you. The interests of the Libyan people, their neighbors, the European Union, and the international community must come together to bolster these goals, to achieve them together. We are together. We're strong in the face of terrorism. States must be able to count on themselves to guarantee security. This very security must draw upon regional and international security arrangements that I've just talked about earlier. The decisions taken by the G5 Sahel have embodied this very approach. This was also the idea of the African Union's intention to undertake greater responsibility to ensure peace on the continent. This is the very idea behind the initiatives in the Lake Chad Basin with Niger, Cameroon, spearheaded by the African Union. This is the reason we should be supporting the AU initiative for a better definition of responsibility between the United Nations and the African Union. I'd like to see, by the end of the year, a resolution adopted along these lines. We are strong in the face of terrorism when together we undertake responsibility to push back against all financing thereof. We do this together in the Alliance for the Sahel. We act in the name of development, agriculture, education, attacking the very root causes of terrorism and the very ways terrorists acquire weapons. $7.5 billion have already been pledged, pooled together with all states and partners of the alliance. These are just the first results, and ones which must be built upon. As you can see in each one of these crises, the solution was not simply leaving states to their own devices, nor acting in their stead, nor imposing solutions, but rather to uphold the principle of sovereignty, to engage in genuine regional cooperation and international cooperation. This is the very triptych which shall lead us to solutions to today's crises. Only collective action allows for the upholding of the sovereignty and equality of the people in whose name we take action. This is the reason we must take action against climate, demographic, and digital challenges. No one alone can tackle these in the face of migration flows. I don't believe in the idea of unconditional openness. This simply leads to worry and intolerance. I don't believe either in the fallacious statements made by some in Europe and elsewhere that we would be stronger were we to close our borders. That's not true either. The only real effective way to effectively manage migration flows impacting all of our continents is to create conditions for chosen international mobility to work together. And I mean countries of origin, transit, and destination, so as to address the root causes of migration, dismantling trafficking networks, which are indeed the worst manifestation of this crisis, and to promote borders while at the same time upholding international law and, in particular, unconditional protection of those with the right to asylum. This is indeed what we've decided to commit to together in the compact to be adopted in Marrakesh, which I support. In the face of climate change, here there can be no shortcuts or one-size-fits-all solutions. Even those who may deny climate change are suffering the consequences, just like everybody else. Extreme weather phenomenon today has become a daily event. In refusing collective action, certain individuals only make themselves more vulnerable. In the face of the digital divide, our task is to create modern rules which will bring together the development of artificial intelligence and ethics, as well as to support the digital transition of our societies. Friends, I deeply believe in the sovereignty of peoples. Today, this is what all people are asking for on the international stage. But at the same time, this requires multifaceted international cooperation and renewed international commitment. The great challenge has always been the drive for peace. In the 21st century, we shall only triumph through bolstered multilateralism, one which is genuinely in a position to resolve pressing issues, but also one which allows us to actually address the root causes. My point is, I don't believe in generalized or empty globalization. I don't think this can be a reality. But I believe in universal values, and that's what should guide us. Those are two different things. I think there should be unconditional protection of our values, human rights, the dignity of the human person, gender equality. I believe in our ability to create or strike effective balances between peoples while still upholding the principle of universality. That's the truth. I shall never stop upholding the principle of sovereignty. Even in the face of certain nationalism, which we're seeing today, brandishing sovereignty as a way of attacking others. Here today, even those who might criticize it, we have all benefited from the way that global order is structured around globalization. We've all benefited from it. There was a stage of humanism, if you like. But today, it's time to take a hard look at the root causes of the imbalances before us, the weaknesses of the current global order, actually looking at the inequalities which have become entrenched. I think that's the part of the problem, the heart of the problem. Why are we seeing emerging nationalism? Why are we seeing emerging crises? These very same far-reaching inequalities which remained unaddressed. 10 years ago, when the international financial crisis hit, emergency measures were taken. Without, though, addressing the real problem. We failed to address the unequal spread of wealth across the globe. We also failed to address all those who felt left behind. And in so feeling, became frustrated. This because of humiliation. And today, we're paying the collective price for all of that. What is needed now is a solution for all. For all of the children who are unallowed to go to school, to all of those in abject poverty in sub-Saharan Africa, to all of those girls who are not allowed equal access to school, to the 700 million children living in the most affected regions for climate change, impacted by droughts, floods, rarefication of resources or disappearing resources, women with no access to contraceptives, those who are unprotected by laws and are subject to domestic violence, to the those who suffer salary gaps. We need a solution for the 783 million living under the poverty threshold, those suffering from hunger and malnutrition, those without access to health care. There must be a solution given to youth. The driver of history. I'm talking about more than 2 billion people between the ages of 10 and 24 years old. 80% of them living in developing countries. A solution is needed for all of those whose eyes are fixed on us, because this solution depends on what we are able to do here together in this assembly. Those who think that we don't owe any solution to those I've mentioned before are wrong. They are wrong because in so thinking, they create crises. They create a world that is worse, that would be inherited by our children and future generations. Today, with the 2030 agenda, we've begun the path forward. We've begun working on the solution. Think about the gaps in GDP. If we want to create stability and balance, this state of inequality must be addressed. Action must be taken. This is the reason, as I announced last year as well, that I decided to bring France's ODA to 1 billion euros by 2019, credits increasing by 40%. It is also for this reason that combating inequality will be the priority of the French presidency of the G7 summit. France, after Canada, which I would like to hail here, is the incoming chair of the G7. Here, I'd like to see far-reaching reform so as to bring on several other powers working on new forms of coordination. It is here, from this podium, that I wanted to share with you that tackling inequalities will be at the heart of the G7's mission. This is going to be the commitment discussed during the meeting, because in the past, rich countries were able to impose an agenda on the rest, but that time has changed. Here, we've understood just how interlinked everybody is. Indeed, the time has come to combat current inequalities, which are indeed the root cause of the scourge I touched upon earlier. We must attack inequalities of fate, if you like. It's not acceptable anymore that an individual would have lesser opportunity simply due to where they are born or their gender, to lack access to health care for those very same reasons. Last year, with the president of Senegal, we spoke about this during the Global Conference for Financing for Development. And in February in Dakar, there was an opportunity to raise $2.5 billion to develop access to education across the globe. This is a historic sum. France has increased tenfold its contribution. G7 mobilization under the Canadian chairmanship will allow us to make further strides forward. This is a turning point, ladies and gentlemen. This is a time where we see if we will truly find solutions commensurate with the challenge. There are 620 million children across the globe lacking access to education. Let us address this. Give these children a foundation. Put them in the driver's seat of their lives. Should we not do this? Should we fail to do this? What world will we be leaving behind us? This is the reason that France has made solid commitment along these lines. This is why I highlight professional training, the training of teachers, as well as gender equality among students. It is also the reason that I call upon all to join this drive for education. Education will not just be the pillar in the years to come, but also the very foundation of our economies. We must unwaveringly push back against gender inequalities. In France, I made gender equality one of the big slogans of my presidency, and I'd like to see this be a global drive as well. Women and girls are the main groups impacted by poverty as well as climate change, inter alia. They are the main victims of gender-based violence or discrimination, phenomena which stop them from moving freely as well as from enjoying the freedom to decide what they do with their bodies. It is time to put an end to all of this. It is time to stop making women victims, but instead giving them their due place, which is one of leaders. It is time to guarantee across the board access to education, health, employment, economic and political decision-making, combating all forms of violence against women. France intends to put forward with interested governments, or rather to propose a coalition for the adoption of new laws on gender equality. 50% of our aid to development will be dedicated to projects which seek to reduce gender inequality. This is also a time to relaunch mobilization in inequalities in health. In 2019, we will be hosting a conference on the Global Fund for Combating HIV/AIDS, Tuberculosis, and Polio. We're initiating a drive against counterfeit medications and intend to take action against sweeping pandemics. Here, I call on each and every one of you to stand with us. Finally, we should understand the urgency of combating environmental inequalities. It is not acceptable for 45% of greenhouse gas emissions to be produced by the 10 richest countries of the planet. It's not effective, as is the case for solar energy, that countries with greatest capacity and greatest need be the very countries with least access to adaptive technologies. It's not sustainable for 100 million to be condemned between now and 2030 to live in abject poverty should we not achieve our goals in combating climate change or global warming. This, too, is an area for global mobilization. Some countries suffer more than others. We should stand shoulder to shoulder with them. We must all understand the disasters experienced by peoples and even our very children. The Paris Agreement has stayed intact, and that is because we have decided to stay unified in spite of the U.S.'s decision to withdraw. This is power, and this is the way that we overcome the challenges. We've been told that there are solutions, but financing is lacking. So let's find it. Let's think out of the box. That's what we did last year in Paris with so many of you during the One Planet Summit, with specific commitments and results already on the way. That's what we did in the beginning of the year in Delhi with the International Solar Alliance. That is what we will be doing tomorrow in New York with the second One Planet Summit. People say it's too late, that we won't meet our goals. Well, then let's hurry up. Let's adopt together the rules for application of the Paris Agreement at COP24 in December. Let's implement the protocol against the HFC gases, which could make global temperature drop by 1% by 2020, or 1 degree rather, by 2020. Let us set the goal of concluding in 2020 a global compact for the environment, which is ambitious, bold. What now about the conference in 2020? There have to be concrete steps taken. Let us also be clear, consistent. There's certainly an urgent situation. So let's, for an example, stop signing trade agreements with those who don't comply with the Paris Agreement. Let's have our trade agreements take on board our environmental obligations. Let us mobilize sovereign funds as well as others so as to tackle this climate challenge. France continues with all interested parties to spearhead this global fight against climate change. In the G7, we will be working to see the Paris obligations increased. Should someone be against, we shall nonetheless press ahead through new formats, new fora, because the G7 must remain a group which is firmly committed to democracy, a unified one, but one which should also lead to new coalitions to allow for a reforging of the global collective system. Let us engage in new forms of cooperation to make strides forward, to take decisions. It is but together, that we can effectively push back against all of these inequalities which have eroded our societies. Mistrust, isolationism are fueled by such actions. All of these inequalities that we've let fester and our collective inability to effectively find solutions. No single one of us can effectively combat inequalities, as I described, if this individual is to act alone. In that case, there would only be two solutions. Number one, to always take the lowest standard, to stick to the status quo. That's what we've done for 10 years. Trade war? Fine. Lessen worker benefits, for an example. Always lowering the bar. Well, where does that go? It simply entrenches inequalities in our societies. And that's what we're seeing now. The other solution would be pointing the finger at the rules. Well, the rules don't work, so let's make our own. Let's close the doors. Isolationism, protectionism. Ladies and gentlemen, that leads to only one thing: heightened tensions. It surely doesn't tackle the inequalities I've spoken of. No, I think it is time to establish a collective mechanism, one for working together in every one of our countries to tackle inequalities, to assess, but also to pool best practices. So I'm proposing that international institutions, the United Nations, but also the OECD, support us in the setting up of this mechanism, which should be driven by the G7, to triumph over inequality. It's the method that has to change. First, review the rules in the area of trade and business as well as in the social sphere. Instead of working towards protectionism, we should work together to revise the WTO rules. We should see how the WTO can better address conflict, put forth rules to deal with antitrust, the respect of intellectual property, and the transfer of technology to put everyone on equal footing. This year, the G20 in Argentina should produce a credible roadmap for the reforging of the WTO. This is also what we intend to do in the social sphere. Next year, during the 100-year anniversary of the ILO, we also need to reforge the very modes of action such that those who've been left behind come on board, those who aren't here today, the great non-state actors who are changing the world but who are conspicuously absent in the drive against inequalities. For an example, stakeholders in the digital field, in IT, those also who are combating various forms of crime in this field, in information technology, it's time to find new modes of functioning for this cooperation, as well as engaging in dialogue with those from the private sector and internet heavyweights. Then Africa must be given a central and leading role in this newly formed international order. It is not just on this continent, rather, it is on this continent that we will either win or lose in the pushback against inequalities. This drive must be done with the African continent because this is where we see the strongest force of regional unions. It is where we've understood that only together we can tackle the challenges before us. In alliance with Africa, the French chairmanship of the G7 will be looking at all of these issues, but together. You see, I believe that in the face of these divisions and challenges, we must rewrite the code of conduct so as to best combat current inequalities. It is the duty of France, as well as all of its European partners, including the EU, to be in the front lines of this combat, to build a new world order with a human face that knows no protectionism, isolationism, but is entirely realistic. And at the same time, building as a mediator these new rules of the new global order. Ladies and gentlemen, at a time where our collective system is falling apart, sadly, it is most in demand. For that reason, we shall support those working for peace and humanity. UNESCO, it's the conscience, if you like, of the United Nations, the Human Rights Council, the International Criminal Court, UNRWA, to whom we continue to contribute. As I remind you here, the idea at the end of the day is allowing hundreds of thousands of children to go to school. That's it. We intend to defend the broadening of the Security Council in the two member categories to ensure that the composition reflect current balances and that the Council remain a place of cooperation and rather than obstructionism. We will ensure that by the end of the year, the General Assembly and the two-thirds of its membership be able to support the limitation of the veto right in case of mass atrocities. We shall defend international humanitarian law in support of those risking their lives to assist civilians on the ground by negotiating, in each and every case, humanitarian access. During the anniversary of the 1948 declaration, we were reminded that human rights are not a cultural fact, negotiable values. No, they are fundamental values enshrined in international treaties as committed to freely by this very assembly. We recall that the universality is compatible with the sovereignty of peoples and is indeed the only way to preserve and ensure people's enjoyment of their fundamental rights. France shall remain there to ensure that the world not forget that nationalism always leads to defeat, that if courage is lacking in the defense of fundamental principles, international order becomes fragile. And this can lead, as we've seen already twice, to global war. We saw that with our very own eyes. On 11 November 2018, the forum in Paris will be a time for a melding of the minds, to find that courage again, to find what unites us here. It's to be an opportunity to renew our firm commitment to the preservation of future generations from the scourge of war. It is my intention to take with other interested parties new responsibilities. Over the course of the forum, we should identify the actual ways and means to achieve lasting peace. Friends, I know you may be tired of multilateralism. I also know that the world is flooded with information and one becomes indifferent. It all starts to look like a big show. It all starts to look like even the worst things can become trendy. And it becomes difficult to extricate the cause from the effect. Well, this is not a matter of being trendy, ladies and gentlemen. For those who've brought us here, we have a duty. We must never forget that genocides, which led to you being here today, the very genocides which are even fueled by certain divisions that I spoke of earlier, and indeed the erosion of the global order, which I spoke of earlier, all of this happens because we turn our head, we turn our heads, and we remain complacent. But that is not what I intend to do. No, that is because I come from a country which is, yes, we've made a lot of mistakes. My country has made a lot of mistakes. But it is a country which at every turn of its history and in international history has thought of that very principle of universality. And so please, don't get used to it. Don't become indifferent. Do not accept the erosion of multilateralism. Don't accept our history unraveling. I'm not getting used to this, and I'm not turning my head to it. Our children are watching. Let us address the crises. Let us work together to combat all of these inequalities. But let us do this on a human level and mindful of the principles guided by our history and the principle of universality and universalism. That is my commitment to you, and I count on you.
On behalf of the General Assembly, I thank His Excellency, Mr. Emmanuel Macron, President of the French Republic, for the statement just made. May I request representatives to remain seated whilst we greet the Head of State?